Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host today for this episode, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle. And before we begin, I just wanted to note that we are recording on Monday, 9/11, which is the 16th anniversary of the horrible event. So we definitely wanted to pay our respects to everyone who was affected. Well, without further ado, I want to introduce our special guest for today, Jamil Rush, Director of Organizational Development at Dan Zimmerman. Thanks for joining us, Jamil.
Thanks for having me, Bruce.
Woo! We always like to give our grandiose applause and let people know that we really appreciate busy people like you for coming on the podcast. So, to kick off our conversation, can you give the listeners a brief summary about Dan Zimmerman and about what you do there?
Yeah, so Dan Zimmerman is a little over 115-year-old private, actually family-owned company. So we're a bit of a weird organization in that we have four very distinct businesses that we operate in. So one is our Yo business, which is a staffing group, actually. So traditional staffing work, recruitment, MSP, that type work. We also have a munitions manufacturing arm. So that's exactly what it sounds like. We make bombs. Then we have what we call our energy construction and maintenance business, which is a group that works on basically nuclear and fossil plants and fixing them up whenever they go down during the off cycles of energy usage. And then our fourth business is our government services business, which is private security. So, high skilled, high combat overseas, U.S. private security work over there. Specifically, I work within the organizational development group, so I support two of our businesses from a talent management standpoint. So that's our energy construction and maintenance business, as well as our munitions manufacturing business, with everything as it relates to talent management. That could be anything from change management to leadership development, to talent development, even some training work inside of that. And then I manage a few of our enterprise-wide programs. So I manage the performance management process for DMZ, as well as the mentoring program, and put on one of our leadership development programs for our mid-level managers or director-level roles.
Got it. And then I also see here that you have been a busy person over the years. You've been an adjunct professor at Temple. You were at Aramark. You've also been, the city of Philadelphia. Way back in the day, it seems yes. You were an intern there. I'm a bit of a stalker on LinkedIn, if you didn't know. So, just understand that's a part of my job.
It's a good place to find the city of Philadelphia work.
Nice. But what I really wanted to do is focus on your involvement and have the conversation today about diversity and inclusion, because it's a huge topic. There's a lot of people talking about it. And it doesn't really seem like people really understand what diversity and inclusion really means. So I would really like for you to explain, at least to me and to the listeners, what is diversity and inclusion, or what's called the D&I space in the HR space?
Yeah, and if I broke it down to its most its simplest form around this, when we think about diversity and inclusion as a business practice, it's really about making sure that, one, you are finding the best talent for your organization from all walks of life. And then, two, making sure that once that talent gets into your organization, they have the opportunity to be successful, and you create a work environment where everyone can thrive regardless of their background, experience, insert adjectives here that describe a person or their demographic. So it's really about helping the business become better by maximizing all types of people within an organization and all types of talent that they can tap into.
And with that being said, what's the difference between having a diverse workforce versus having an inclusive workforce? Because I've seen presentations and also read some blogs that say that they are two totally different things, and most people just lean on having, or at least trying to have, a diverse workforce.
Yeah, you hear diversity and inclusion used sort of interchangeably, but they are two very distinct functions. And there's the age-old adage, which is diversity is the mix of people, and inclusion is making the mix work. So any organization is going to have some level of diversity within it. And you can work very hard to get good representation inside of your organization. But that's such a fraction of the battle, because just to get people there from different backgrounds, experiences, sexual orientations, all those things means very little if once they get there, they can't be successful. So more importantly, or just as importantly within the function, is that inclusion piece of how do I make sure you can be your best self, bring your best self, and do your best work once you get into our organization.
And I want to stick on diversity for a little bit more, because when people hear diversity, a lot of times they hear ethnicity. Hmm. And I'm assuming now diversity also will mean gender as well, in regards to a lot of people. I'm not saying my own personal opinion, but right, what's in the media, what's on a lot of blogs, what's being spoken about in a lot of conferences, is typically ethnicity, and then there's gender, especially with gender pay disparity and a lot of other things. But are there other areas of diversity that people should care about? And what are the other areas of diversity that you think about?
Yeah, and there's a lot more. I would agree with you. The basic ones that always come to mind for people are race and ethnicity, as well as gender diversity. But there are a ton of other things out there that make someone diverse or unique as an individual. So it could be veteran status. It could be a disability. It could be sexual orientation, and a number of other things, right? If you go even broader with diversity, it could be things like the area you grew up in, the socioeconomic status that you had. Some organizations even look as deep as religious affiliations within those things. So there, it's really about just understanding all the unique attributes of an individual, and making sure we appreciate the unique attributes of that individual and how it makes them see the world differently, and how we can tap into that different vision of the world in order to get more innovative new solutions for the organization.
So this might be a little touchy, but how is the current political climate and everything else going on in the world affecting diversity and inclusion? I'm assuming it's not making it easier. But on the other hand, because we're seeing so many differences and so many people speaking out about all of our differences in the country right now, does it in fact make it a little easier because it's now bringing it to the forefront and that you get resources and can have an open and honest conversation about it? Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, I think there's been a little bit of a false sense of security around diversity, and not just within organizations, but nationally and internationally, that we had been making really, really big strides, and that the world was in some ways sort of past those biases that exist. I think what we've seen over the last few years is that a lot of things have been questioned and in some ways brought to light that there's still a lot of work to do. Not that we haven't gotten better at it as a society and as organizations that focus on that work, but there is still a lot of work around it. And I think what we've really seen happen over the last couple of years is that organizations have been tested. So you will see on a ton of Fortune 500 companies, when they talk about their values or the things that are important to the organization, diversity comes up constantly. And if you go to the career section of almost any Fortune 500 organization, you'll see diversity listed out there in some way, shape, or form, in some vision statement or mission statement or diversity statement that's there for the organization. Now what's happening is, because of the political and cultural environment around this, organizations now are being looked at by their employees to understand what is their stance on these things. And organizations are having to have very uncomfortable conversations that they traditionally did not have to operate in, right? So I just want to do the work of my business. But now the people are saying, what is your perspective on this? You said that you value diversity. We want to hear your voice and talk to us about how we need to operate inside this environment, how we need to represent you as our organization. And there's been a lot of wrestling now with people saying, do I speak out on this issue? Do I have a voice? Do I give my perspective? Do I stay in a safe place around it? And more employees of these companies are saying, I want to hear from my leaders around this, and I want to hear from my leaders around these issues. That's a very uncomfortable space because it challenges both the organization's stance on it, but then even in some cases, even the senior most leader stance around a lot of these issues. So I'm trying to be pretty tactful in my response around it, but I think the reality, now you have to put your money where your mouth is, right? So what are you really saying when you say I value diversity as an organization?
So I'm a very practical guy, and I like to get into the weeds for our listeners. So if I'm a person working in the HR space or the D&I space, and I am looking to implement a brand new diversity and inclusion strategy, I'm someone who has already put together and now executing on a D&I strategy, or I'm someone who's already done it and then I'm looking back to see how could I have made it better, or I want to begin the initiative all over again. Let's start from the beginning. How do I put together a plan or a strategy for this, and what should I be looking for?
Yeah, the first thing you need to start with is having a conversation with your senior leaders around why. Right? Why is diversity critical for us as an organization? So I'll use an example. For me here at Day & Zimmerman, diversity is one of our top values. And when our CEO talks about it, he talks about the future of our organization. And he talks about the future of talent. When you think about the energy sector, it is a very traditionally male, white male dominated space. So when he looks at the workforce and the changes of the demographics, specifically within the United States, he understands that if we can't tap into other backgrounds or other types of talent, we're not going to be able to survive and we're not going to be able to get the people. So that becomes a big why. And then he also talks a lot about innovation. So when we think about D&I, one of the biggest attributes of companies that do well within diversity and inclusion is I think their stats of anywhere from 7 to 10 times more innovative than other organizations, than homogenous teams around it. So he talks about the ability to be innovative inside of our markets if we're able to get diversity. So step one is having a conversation with your senior leaders to say, what is the business strategy around why we should be putting efforts in around diversity and inclusion? That becomes the foundation of this, because if you see it as an altruistic function or a social cause function, you're not going to get people bought in. They really need to understand that there is a business case behind the D&I work. So step one before all of this is determining your business case and the why for the organization. Because now what you do after that now becomes a driver of that business case. And you can look at what aspects of diversity and inclusion you want to focus on. Is it tapping into untapped talent markets and coming up with new recruitment strategies? Is it looking at the engagement of your workforce and trying to make sure that people can do more and within the workforce? Is it looking at the promotions within your organization and making sure that people are getting promoted from different walks of life within it? So all of that is an output of the business case that you have to develop around D&I.
That's great. So we figured out the business case. We figured out why this is important. What does that look like for our listeners? Again, just to get into the details. For an HR professional who is confused or trying to figure out how to start this, that sounds great in theory, but what does that look like? Are they doing a survey throughout the employee base? Is the HR person coming out with that and then taking it to the leadership team? Are they sitting around brainstorming in a whiteboard session? Who's coming up with the reason of why the business needs to be more diverse? And then how is the entire leadership team coming together to really solidify that?
Yeah. And it probably varies a little bit based on your organization and the way it's made up. I think the first place to start is what is the business strategy overall? And what is the organization planning to do in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, whatever that lookout might be. So first, it's talking to your CEO and making sure that your CEO, your senior leader, and saying, what is our long-term vision for the organization around it? And then once you have that as a centerpiece around that, then it is literally getting in the room with either that senior leader or a group of senior leaders. Some organizations have diversity councils where they assemble cross-functional teams with operations, finance, HR, sales, marketing, anything that you can think of. And those people get in a room and they talk about what is our strategy around D&I and how will it help to enable our overall business strategy. And that focus group is something that I think the HR or D&I leader can take the output and the feedback from that focus group to bring it down to something much more succinct and a mission statement around diversity inclusion.
So I like how you said that HR D&I person is speaking to all the different stakeholders in sales, marketing, ops, etc. With that being said, do you think the person responsible for D&I should try to bring the entire organization to be more diverse all at the same time? Or is it better to go department by department? Or is it more look at the least diverse areas of the business and start from there? How would you go about doing that?
Yeah, and I don't know that there's a one-size-fit-all answer. The one thing I will say, it's you can't accomplish everything. And if you try to do everything, it's very likely that you end up doing nothing across of it. So it's about the places that give you the biggest bang for your buck within it. So what are the places that are in the most need based on what you determine your D&I strategy needs to be? So if it's a recruitment strategy, meaning you don't have the representation of, let's just say, females within a certain department of your team, and you're looking at it and that group's 80% male dominated and it's 20% female, and you're saying we really want to close that gap around there. If that's something that is across all departments, then yeah, you want to come up with an organizational strategy around it. But if it's strictly within your engineering group, then it's a recruitment strategy specifically for that engineering group within it. So really taking a look at the entire org and saying, where are my needs? If there's a recruitment issue here, and then a promotional issue here, and then an engagement issue here, then I'd rather have three strategies that'll solve specifically for those gaps that we have versus trying to come up with something that's too broad that won't really adequately meet the needs of any of those one departments within the organization. So really diagnosing where's the need and then coming up with the exact plans to meet those needs and looking at whether or not those things need to be broader across the organization or really pinned down to specific groups or departments.
Nice. Okay, so I met with my senior state leadership stakeholders. I figured out a plan. I've figured out how to tie in this strategy to the overall business strategy. Now, what exactly is in that strategy in regards to metrics to determine success and data that I need? Am I pouring through data to understand where the greatest need is? Am I just talking to stakeholders and then figuring out from a business strategy standpoint that's where the biggest need is? How am I using data and metrics to figure out where to start, where the greatest need is, and then also to benchmark success so that I can know whether or not what I've done was successful and then it created some type of impact?
Yeah. And you know, it's always about the story that you're looking to not just tell, but the story that you're trying to get an understanding of with it. So if I look back to my days within diversity inclusion, when I was with my prior organization, one of the things that we were really interested in was our candidate pipeline. So are we even touching the right groups of employees through recruitment? So we looked at what is the diversity mix of applicants, not at an individual level, but holistically across all of our roles to say, are we getting the right mix of people even applying for our jobs in order to create diversity through the door. So we looked at a certain number of diversity within all of our applicant flows. And that was across veteran status, that was across disabilities, that was across racial and ethnic diversity groups, gender, all those things included inside of it. So that was one thing that we placed on our dashboard. What's the mix of people applying for our jobs? Then there's the hiring piece, right? But one would assume that if you have an appropriate mix of people applying, that that should help you in making sure that the people you're bringing in and are representative of the populations that you're getting within that mix. And if there's a gap there where you're having really good diversity on the applicant side, but no one's getting through the door here, then you know where you can look, right? So now it's that recruitment process and making sure that you're meeting with the right stakeholders, that the interview process is one that's equitable, all those things that come across it. On the other side, there can be a promotional piece. So you can look at the diversity makeup of people that have been promoted within your organization. And that'll help you understand to see, is everyone getting equal opportunities to rise and grow through the ranks within our environment. So that's another one. Most organizations are doing engagement surveys right now. So typically within that engagement survey, you're able to look at breakdowns of employees within it and look at the engagement results across your different workforce demographics and see what they're telling you. Are you getting similar results across your different employee groups, or are you seeing specific gaps that are coming out of those engagement surveys? So those are three really basic ones that will probably help to tell a story for you around D&I and how some of your efforts are working.
That's great. And that was a good segue into my next question. You mentioned dashboards, you mentioned surveys, and I'm assuming you were getting that candidate diversity pipeline information from your applicant tracking system.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to know, can you give our listeners some insight in regards to what types of software or technology they should and could be using to be able to track diversity and inclusion and also show ROI of the whole initiative?
Yeah. And are you looking at specific software types or just the types of software?
However you want to answer the question.
So previous organization, we used ISIMS, which was our applicant tracking tool that allowed us to do a ton of reporting around all of our candidate metrics, not specific to diversity and inclusion, but everything from time to fill to the diversity makeups to, applicant flow and how quickly they were moving through the process once someone got through the door. So that one became really helpful for us. Once they get through the door, there's a lot of... there's a ton of opportunity of software that you can use. Our engagement vendor then was through the Hey Group that allowed us to get a lot of insights into just engagement across a variety of populations. So anything that we had from an employee demographic standpoint, we could provide that to Hey. And the beauty around using those was that they kept it all anonymous for us. We didn't see individualized results for any one employee. And it was always grouped together in the way that they reported the results back out to us. So it prevented any question around whether or not someone's results were being used against them, but it still provided us the insights we needed to create meaningful action plans at the organization level. And then we always tie that into our HR data and dashboards that some were built in-house, some were built externally that looked at things like turnover, retention, representation, all those things that you can think about around a dashboard for it. And in some ways, it was a lot of rubber bands and paper clips together of looks into it, but making sure that we really had a good sense of where we were from a people perspective.
Got it. And another question that I had was, how do you scale D&I? What does that look like from launching the initial strategy up to making sure that you can scale organization-wide? And not only that, but how do you maintain a diverse and inclusive workforce once you get that, whatever that looks like for your specific company?
Yeah, it's something that takes work. I would say the first step around it is you need to make sure your senior leaders are on board with diversity and inclusion, because they need to be able to make an investment around it, both from their voice and time and energy, but even financial investment around the work that needs to happen. So if you don't have senior leaders that are bought in, that D&I is an important strategy for your organization and an important business strategy to the success of your organization, it's going to be very hard to scale. You also need their power and the weight of their position to help move people who aren't bought in to the work around it. So step one, get all of those senior leaders or as many as possible of those senior leaders on board with the work that you're planning to do and that it's an important business driver for you. I think once you get that support, scaling becomes a lot easier because now you have executive sponsors and champions who are there in the business to either help you gain buy-in or push buy-in on those who aren't quite there yet. So then it becomes, what are the specific strategies that I need to start with to our earlier conversation that are going to help give me the biggest bang for my buck? So what are the specific things that I'm going to do in year one, year two, year five, year 10 on down the line, right? So what's my short-term and long-term strategy around this? So short-term, it might be getting a more diverse recruitment strategy or touching more populations on the recruitment side. It might be driving engagement for all of our represented employee populations. And then long-term, it might be becoming a best-in-class D&I organization and one where everyone feels like they can bring their whole selves to work within it. So once you've sort of determined what your real long-term goal is, using all of those populations that you've assembled around this, so that could be your executive sponsors, it could be employee resource groups or affinity groups that you've built within the organization, it could just be champions that you build with them and helping them to understand the metrics that you're measuring for success within D&I and pulling all that together to make sure you're constantly evaluating your efforts and see whether or not they're working.
That was a great answer. And now we have our section called Questions from the Field.
All right.
And this will be our last D&I question.
Okay.
So we had a question from Carla Thomas, the strategic relationship manager at HR consulting firm Exude. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to know, much has been shared about the business case for D&I, both good and bad. So what does the future look like for D&I practitioners?
Yeah. And D&I has been under heat the last couple of years. I think most of the time when diversity and inclusion gets in trouble, it's because the organization or the person or whoever it might be has not created a deep enough tie behind why it's a business case. And very often D&I practitioners get in this space because it's a cause close to them. And it's something that they're sort of operating in it out of advocacy for those underrepresented populations, which, you know, that's very important. You need to have the passion and the drive and the desire to fight for those who might not have a voice within your organization. But if that's the only space you're coming from and you're talking to leaders out of a space of advocacy and not one out of business impact, you're not really going to get very far around it. So what's really important is just saying this is the business impact. If we don't do this, this is what's going to happen to us business-wise from a talent perspective, from profit perspective, from a dollars and cents perspective, from a social reputation perspective, whatever that might be, it's very important to talk around that business case. So I think what you're going to see for D&I practitioners as we get better and better within organizations around looking at the business case and more data is coming out around why it's important for organizations to have strong diversity functions, you're going to see that happen. You're going to see that function grow, so to speak. So you're going to see people get better with diversity because they're able to talk about, hey, here's what we were able to save from a dollars and cents standpoint. Here's what we were able to, the insights we were able to gain to our consumers. Here's why people shop with us because of our brand and reputation around it. So all those things become critical to the growth.
Really appreciate that answer. So I want to switch gears a little bit and bring up your other big title, which is you're the Philly Sherm president.
Yes.
Which is pretty, pretty cool. So, you know, congrats.
Thank you.
So for those who don't know, which I'm sure almost everyone listening to a podcast about HR would know, but for those who don't, what is Sherm?
Yeah, SHRM is the Society for Human Resource Management. So we are a national organization, well, international organization that focuses on assembling HR practitioners and making sure we help to advance the HR profession within organizations and in some cases even politically and socially the cause of HR around it. So I am the president of the Philadelphia chapter of it. So it's a local chapter of that national arm. We have somewhere around 1,300 members in the Philadelphia area, both HR practitioners and then business leaders who are passionate around making sure they have the best possible people within the organization.
Sorry to interrupt your podcast, but I have some questions for my HR leaders listening. Are you currently drowning in spreadsheets or having to log into too many different systems for all your workforce data? Are you spending way too much time creating HR reports with no time left to actually analyze the data? Are you tired of being the only executive without a dashboard to share with the leadership team? If this sounds like you, then check out EmployeeCycle, the HR metrics dashboard built to solve this problem. EmployeeCycle brings all your workforce data together into a user-friendly dashboard by connecting to all your HR systems and spreadsheets. Sign up for access to the beta now at EmployeeCycle.com and learn how to get your HR source of truth. Again, that's EmployeeCycle.com. Now back to the amazing podcast episode.
So, sticking with the theme of diversity and inclusion, how is SHRM, specifically the Philadelphia SHRM chapter, preparing HR professionals in dealing with diversity and inclusion?
Yeah. So one of the things one of my favorite things about becoming Philly SHRM president is that every president gets to come in and develop their own what we call platform. So your term is for 2 years. In true HR fashion, there's a ton of succession planning. So you do 2 years in training, 2 years as president, and then actually 2 years as what we call past president, where you act in an advisory role for the current president. So for my 2 years as president, I get to sort of talk about what is the platform that we're going to focus around and what are the things that we're going to focus on. In addition to the day-to-day logistics and programming of the chapter, what additional things are going to help to drive for the Philadelphia area. For the next couple of years, we'll be focused around workforce development and readiness. So this is really about making sure that organizations are able to tap into untapped talent within the Philadelphia region. As many of our listeners know, Philadelphia actually has one of the highest poverty rates of large cities within our country. And with that, a pretty sizable unemployment and underemployment rate. At the same time, when we talk about our organizations within Philly SHRM specifically, but even broadly, if you go larger than that, one of the top things we constantly hear back from senior leaders about what are their biggest needs and what are their biggest worries, it's always about finding talent. So to me, that gap shouldn't exist. If we have organizations that are looking for people with the right skills and right backgrounds, and then we have a city where people are saying, I can't find meaningful work, I think one of the things from an HR, as an HR organization and from an HR perspective that we'll be able to help with and aid to bridge the gap with is making sure that one, those workforce development and readiness organizations are giving people the right skills and resources so that they can be marketable. And then that our organizations understand these different venues that they can tap into to find talent from around the Philadelphia area.
And then last question about Philly SHRM. How are you making sure that your chapter is diverse?
Yeah. So it's actually something we're constantly looking at. And I actually have a webinar on that on Thursday to talk about the work we've been doing with Philly SHRM for the broader national chapter. So specifically, we've been looking at, one, from a board's perspective, we try to make sure our board has representation and is diverse in the first place. Because when you're able to get leaders who are diverse, they're able to help you tap into other people for your organization that are within their networks. So that helps it to permeate down. We've also put in a lot of efforts around specifically things like young professionals over the last 5 years ago or so. And we've been actually nationally recognized around our work around young professionals within the HR space. Our emerging leaders group. So that focuses on people in the HR world who are 0 to 8 years, and they change the way we think about networking events. So they make networking events that are more fun, so that people, it takes off the sting or the nervousness that might come across with it. We sponsor local college chapters as well, and we talk about that pipelining of when you go from undergrad or grad level to the workforce of how do we make sure we continue to siphon them into the organization. And then we have actually a workforce development and readiness committee within our board that helps us to look at, one, how do we tap into talent within the organization, but how do we make sure that we have representation across Philly Sherm as well.
That sounds awesome, and we'll definitely put links in Philly Sherm and any webinars that you would like to include in the show notes as well.
Absolutely.
So, really cool. So now we're going to move to our fun lightning round, which I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous,
all right,
where I ask you a real question, a random question, and a ridiculous question.
All right.
So the real question is, do you like bread pudding? And that's a very real question because I am a bread pudding enthusiast, a connoisseur. I'm obsessed. And this is a question that I ask every single listener. So I need to know. And if you do, how do you like it made?
Bread pudding is top five desserts by far. And I am similarly obsessed with bread pudding. I have a favorite bread pudding spot in the country, and it is in Orlando. I don't even know the name of the restaurant because I don't eat there. I literally just order bread pudding whenever I go to Orlando. It's a white chocolate macadamia nut bread pudding.
Oh! Yes, it is. Whoa, we might have to just stop the podcast now. I might need to go fly down. Wow. That sounds amazing.
It's gotten to the point that my friends, when they go to Orlando, they grab me some of that bread pudding and they bring it back up with me. It's happened on more than one occasion.
All right. See, I knew we were going to have a good connection, but now because, you know, bromance just went to an entirely new level now because I also have places where I just go and get bread pudding as takeout. I don't even eat there.
Yeah.
I don't even know what food they serve. I just know that they have bread pudding.
It doesn't. My wife picks out restaurants when she's, if she wants to celebrate for me, she'll pick out restaurants by their bread pudding and food secondary.
That's a good wife. She's a keeper. She's a keeper. So, the random. What was the last book you've read?
Yeah. It's actually a book called The Inbox Detox. And it was one provided for me by Philly Sherm has an association management company. It's called Seamless Events. But the book is all centered around how do you become more manageable in the way you do email. And they just kind of gave it out as a gift to all the board members. But it was so critical because I was just at a space where I was becoming overwhelmed with trying to answer the hundreds of emails that happen on a given day and actually do any work at the same time. So it's this great book around, you know, one, productivity tools that you can use in Outlook that help you to organize your email, tips and tricks, and then just ways to come off the addiction that is email at the same time. So really good book, highly recommended, Inbox Detox.
I'm sure we've all been there. Definitely going to include that in the show notes, and I may need to borrow that from you. So the ridiculous question.
All right.
What's the most ridiculous approach or thing you've ever heard when you see someone trying to solve diversity and inclusion, or the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard or read when a person was saying that there's no case for diversity and inclusion?
So I'll say this is probably not the most ridiculous thing, but
we're in a safe space. It's just you, me, and whoever will be listening to the podcast.
But you know, I hear this one all the time, and I say it's the most ridiculous because people really believe it, right? So very often when you're talking about the business case around diversity and inclusion, and you talk about the need for diversity, what I hear from hiring managers is, oh, well, don't worry about diversity. I just want to hire the best people, right? So that's very often what you hear, which on face value, it makes sense, right? I do want to just hire the best people. But when you dig a little deeper into that, you realize how surface that really is. One, because the word best is subjective. Two, because our own biases that we all have, and I don't say bias as a negative thing. I say it as a fact of life and a reality of what we all exist with as human beings means I'm going to be more prone to someone who looks like, not looks like me, but who mirrors me. So that could be from looks. It could be just from background. Maybe we went to the same college together. So I like you a little more because of that. interest around it. So when you say just hire the best person, very often what people are saying is, I just want the person that reminds me the most of what I like, which also could mean reminds me the most of me. And I would say that in order to get to the best result from a business standpoint, you need as many people that are going to challenge the status quo and challenge the way you think about things as most as possible. So really looking for people who might not fit traditional molds or traditional backgrounds, who might challenge the way you think about work within your organization, who might bring new perspectives, is very important. And that might not align with what you think is the quote-unquote best person. It might align with the person that's going to help you get the best results within your organization. So I often hear that. I often challenge it. And I try to make sure that our hiring managers and our business leaders know that just wanting the best person doesn't mean that you shouldn't be looking for a diversity.
Well said. And final question of today, your favorite and least favorite part of HR?
My favorite part, I'll start with the good. My favorite part is I love, you know, HR is about maximizing the human resource, right? So organizations can maximize all types of things. Apple wants to make the best iPhone possible, and they have product and software engineers that focus on that. But HR is really about making sure that your company has the best people possible and that you make them the best people possible. So I love this idea that my entire focus is around getting the best out of every individual that comes to work for Day & Zimmerman or any organization that I'm working with. The least favorite side of HR, you know, there are times that you can feel like an adult camp counselor, and there are things that you thought would kind of disappear once you got into the workplace that might be very, very close to what you experienced in school or the like going through. So anytime you deal with people, you deal with people, and you deal with all the emotions and baggage that comes into play with that. So there are days that can just be exhausting of managing just all those personalities and everything that they bring to the table. But it's also really rewarding if you're able to get through and solve those problems and help people get to a better end result than what they started with.
Well, this has been an amazing episode. Let's give Jamil another round of applause. Woo! Man, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
You really dropped a lot of insight around diversity and inclusion and just HR leadership, SHRM in general. So I hope everyone who was listening was taking a lot of notes. This was great. Where can people find you on the internet? And if Day & Zimmerman is hiring, please let us know and we'll put the career link in the show notes.
Great. Yeah, definitely. You can connect with me on LinkedIn, Jamil Rush, on Twitter, Jamil_Rush. Day & Zimmerman is always looking for great talent, so you can go to dayzim.com to find that, and we'll make sure you get those links. And very much encourage anyone out there who's an HR practitioner or even a business leader to come get involved with Philadelphia SHRM, the Society for Human Resource Management. We have tons of great programming. I'll make sure Bruce and the team has the links to our Philly SHRM website and all the events that we have coming up, including multiple ones this month here in September and a few more throughout the rest of the year and early next year.
Well, again, Jamil, thanks again for being such an amazing guest. Carla, thanks so much for also sending in your question. Greatly appreciate it. Also, before I forget, for all you listeners out there, if you're tired of tracking all your workforce data manually in Excel and you know it's time for you to get an HR dashboard, please go to employeecycle.com to sign up for a demo. With that being said, stay tuned for our next episode. And for you HR pros out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Later, kids.